wisdom rise. Ancestors surround.
Welcome
us
to Advancing the Art of Aging. I'm Carol Silver Elliott, President and CEO of the Jewish Home Family, a continuum of services for older adults located in northern New Jersey. And I am really delighted today to have as my guest Lynn Mertz. Lynn is someone that's become a dear friend of ours over the course of about the last 18 months. She works for AARP, an acronym that's familiar to many people. And Lynn, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, Carol, thank you for having me on. I've enjoyed listening to your podcasts in the past, so it's an honor to now be able to have this conversation with you.
Thank you. So, Lynn, I'm curious to know a little bit about your role and what brought you to AARP. Could you share a little bit of that with our listeners?
Sure. So, I for the last maybe 2 years, I have been a member of the Global Thought Leadership Team within AARP, which my area of focus has been domestically looking to address health disparities. But prior to that, I've actually been with AARP. It's coming on to about 9 years. And what drew me to AARP initially was I joined to be part of the Center to Champion Nursing in America. And while I'm not a nurse, it's a program that I was well aware of and thought very highly of. It's a project of AARP, AARP Foundation, and the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation that was looking to address the future of nursing and implement the report that initially the Institute of Medicine and now the National Academies of Medicine had published and were looking to actualize. But when I showed up at AARP back in 2015, honestly, I didn't realize most of all the things that they did. I thought it was, I don't know what I thought it was, but yeah. I knew it as organization and probably kind of a one-dimensional perspective, and I was just in awe of all the work that was happening. The Center to Champion Nursing in America is part of the Public Policy Institute, and so literally I was just surrounded by folks who were dedicated to addressing the policy issues that are just so important to those who are 50 plus. I think you kind of alluded to when AARP was first founded by Dr. Ethel Percy Andrus, more than 65 years ago, actually, her focus was on retired people that are in AARP. But now, we know, and you've seen it yourself, that people aren't necessarily retiring at a particular age, whether that was 60 or 65. And so we really have just change that to be AARP and that we're serving people at 50 plus. So that's a bit of my experience at AARP. I've really have deep appreciation for all the people that I've been working with and the dedication, whether that is, from any issue. We think of Social Security and Medicare, but it's also housing and it's creating livable communities. And I think when, you were asking, or we had talked at one point about some of my background, mm-hmm. For me, a theme that's been constant in my career has been the threat of social justice. Mm. I don't necessarily have a career in aging. That was something that I've learned about since I've been at AARP. But it's been a consistent thread, whether I was working in the low-income housing community in Newark, New Jersey, or any of the other jobs that I've ever had in higher education, again, working with a low-income population, that's really kind of the thread that the value that's important to me, and that I have been honored to be able to have part of my career, but also something that's drawn me to the kind of career that I've created.
That's great. And I think, and maybe, I'm seeing it through my lenses, but I think there's no population or few populations in the world today that are in more need of social justice than our older adults, particularly in the light of the treatment and the violation of their rights during COVID. I think mm-hmm. such concerns around where social justice should and does not apply to older adults. And it really is an area that, for me, has become of even greater concern. You know, I think many of us who work in senior services, we've sort of gone along blithely until 2020, when we saw how quickly the world could isolate and violate the rights of older Americans specifically. And I think social justice is something that we are in desperate need of when we talk about people who are aging, particularly those who are living in residential environments.
Mm-hmm.
Lynn, we have gotten to know you around Project LEAD, and I would love for you to talk a little bit about where LEAD came from and how AARP and you became involved with LEAD.
I'd be happy to. This has been a very rewarding, project to be able to work on. So LEAD is an acronym, and it stands for Leaders in Equity and Diversity. And the LEAD Collaborative is really a group then, or a collaborative, just as the word allows, a coming together of people who all wanted to address equity and diversity. It's the brainchild of Dr. Malik Joshi, who is the CEO of Meritus Health, and Jean Axius, Dr. Jean Axius, who's formerly was part of the thought leadership team at AARP. Malik was really looking to see how we could work on pulling together a diverse group of organizations in a targeted region, and in this case, it's in the Mid-Atlantic, having people come together who all want to address health equity. That the clear understanding is that it's not, quote-unquote, just any one sector's problem or responsibility. And so we didn't limit it to just hospitals or just, you know, any certain type of profession, but we had, we were very fortunate to have 34 organizations from the Mid-Atlantic region, as I said, the 7-state region. So you in New Jersey are in the north and Virginia is in the south. And they included hospitals, primary care facilities, and community health centers. They included universities and government agencies and nonprofit associations. So the gathering and the richness, I think, of part of what we were trying to do was bring people together for a commitment of 18 months, which each organization identified something that they wanted to do to address a health disparity that they saw in their organization or in their community. There were three primary goals that people were either going to address: a leadership diversity or a healthcare quality disparity that they saw in their organization, or try to address one of the social determinants that they saw was negatively impacting members in their community. So folks didn't need to do all three of those, but many did more than one. Mm-hmm. And we knew going into this, and I think, Carol, you tapped on it when you very, you know, graciously stated that we've become fast friends over the 18 months, that this was an 18-month commitment to really seed an ecosystem. And what I mean by using that kind of term is that we were creating a sense of community of like-minded people who were all looking to address this, that we however that might show up with the needs of our particular organization. And so I think that we've done that. We haven't solved any of these problems, unfortunately, but we went in knowing that it takes longer than 18 months. But we were setting the groundwork, broadening our network, and learning from each other what was working and what wasn't working. So I think that's it in a nutshell, but there might be more that you want me to flesh out there.
I think that's a great overview of what the LEAD Collaborative was all about. You know, from our experience, we were fortunate to be one of four organizations that were brought together by the New Jersey Hospital Association. So it was helpful, I think, for us. We met as a team every other week on Zoom to really understand how different organizations were approaching similar sorts of issues. And many mm-hmm. of us were focused on community, some more specifically around a population segment. And all of us, I would tell you, and I would imagine it goes beyond our little collective of four, have developed a sense that we want to take this work further. And I would think that's happening in other places as well. Is that the case?
It is the case. It is the case. And, you know, anecdotally, I just received an email today from Malik about a conversation that he had with one of the other partner organizations that wanted to learn a little bit more about the Rooney Rule. And that was kind of this, you know, you might recall learning about that, or you might have already been aware of it. But for people who are looking to address diversity within their leadership group. Mm-hmm. One of the, you know, Rooney was a football analogy that for the football coaches and leadership there, that they wanted to make sure that there was always somebody representing underrepresented communities as part of the recruitment process. And so that level of intentionality that finalist candidates must represent diverse populations is one way of ensuring that people are very intentional about diversifying their leadership. And so that's now picked up after our official time frame has ended, and they're continuing these conversations in different organizations and in different ways now. So yeah, and the group from New Jersey, as I recall saying, you know, Teresa Edelstein with the New Jersey Hospital Association, she did a great job recruiting and creating a sense of community. And that while you all had the commonality of being part of the hospital association, you didn't necessarily know each other beforehand.
Right.
And so that's been, you've kind of created a great network and support system that didn't exist there beforehand.
Absolutely. And, you know, Teresa is the rock star of all rock stars. So how fortunate we were to be able to work with her, as we are all the time. But, you know, one of the things that I think was so striking to me, now, I worked in acute care prior to coming to long-term care, did a lot of community kinds of outreach programs. It's always been a passion of mine. And our LEAD project was around community outreach and helping to connect with potentially underserved people in pockets of our county, provide health information and screenings that they could put to real use, but also then to get a sense of where they stood in terms of those social determinants, you know, as far as housing insecurity or food insecurity or feeling they couldn't afford their medications, or as the only elder abuse shelter in New Jersey, of course, looking for patterns that might indicate any sort of elder abuse. And what was so surprising to me, and I know to our team, is despite the very many people we connect with and the very many tentacles we have out there in the community, we walked into this so naively in terms of trying to understand the needs of the population. And, you know, and I know that I shared this with you, you know, we started out with like finding and revising this social determinants of care survey form that primary care physicians use, and we adapted it to our use. And as people came to our first program, we sat them down privately and we asked them like direct questions, like, do you feel that you have any insecurity around housing? And, you know, we I think with good intentions thought, oh, they're going to tell us and we're going to help them find solutions. And isn't this a beautiful thing? And of course, every single person that we asked said, no, I'm fine. But as the months of the program went on and the consistent participants began to come, they started to tell us those things. And we started to see those things. And we began to understand that You know, unlike working in a long-term care setting where people come to you, they say, this is my problem, and we say, here's how we're going to handle it. The community work and really creating that connection requires a much longer, subtler, deeper process than what we have been accustomed to.
Yeah, for sure. And I think your experience could have been replicated in a lot of different places. And part of what a theme that I heard, I mean, on the one hand, you being able to share what you've learned and that it didn't work, because as you said, you're a national leader in what you do, Carol. And so you didn't just bump into this activity. You've been part of it, but you realized that the way that you needed to go doing something different didn't work the way you originally thought, you know, and you admitted that and said, okay, so then how do we make it work? And fast forward, now that what you're experiencing is, you know, it's often been said that this health equity work happens at the speed of trust.
Yeah, yeah.
And that can be, quote unquote, slow or not. But we all know that it takes a while to build trust with our coworkers, with neighbors, with, you know, with everybody, with our own family. And so I think it's completely normal. But we sometimes forget that piece of it. But that thread of trust was echoed with so many different organizations and in so many different ways. And I also think, you know, this challenge of asking people how they are doing and really trying to be aware of that so much of one's health is impacted, you know, by the communities where we all live in. That in order to be effective on the healthcare side, we have to be aware of and then be able to be responsive to that. Learning how to ask those questions takes time, and I hear that constantly. And being really thoughtful about how it's asked, the setting, you know, the whole piece of that has to really be thought through very intentionally, and then just to be open to what you hear.
Absolutely. You know, when you come out of, whether it's an acute care or long-term care, an institutional setting, even a physician's office, someone comes to you, you ask a question, they give you the straight answer, right? Because they're there because they need something from you. But when you are trying to create that deeper, long relationship with someone who can walk away from you, who isn't there because they need to be there or is obligated to be there, it's a very different thing. And, you know, I think about lead as being sort of the big stone that we throw in the water that's sending out ripples. But it seems to me as well that we need a lot more stones.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, it goes to one of the, why did AARP want to be, you know, help support and this effort? And one of the key reasons is that we want to be able to amplify it and to tell its story.
Yeah.
Because I think that there are a whole lot of other organizations out there like yourself and maybe other lead-esque kinds of groups in different places. And if we start hearing about that, we can probably broaden this conversation a whole lot farther. So what you were talking, though, just right before that, one of the things I remember you and I have talked about this, again, it's part of that listening and also giving folks what they have asked for. When you ask them, what do you need, then being able to respond to it. And the example that was very profound, I think, to a number of us, was when Deneen Richmond, who's the one of the co-leads of the LEAD Collaborative, but also is the president of Luminous Doctors Community Health Center, when they asked their residents, and they were mostly seniors, during the pandemic, what was it that they need? And the residents came back saying, you know, their neighbors, people in the community came back saying, we need laundry detergent.
Yeah.
And you think to yourself saying, I'm a hospital. This
right.
isn't what we're, but it was meeting them at their immediate need because they couldn't go out. They couldn't get the detergent. They couldn't clean. and how important that was for them, and also how powerful it was when Luminous provided the detergent.
Yeah.
And said, yeah, they heard me. They heard me. So sometimes it might seem like you're zigging off to the side, but you're actually responding to what the need is that helps together everybody to grow.
Absolutely. I think the other story that really stuck with me from our initial training in person was about COVID testing and drive-ups, and how COVID testing and vaccinations were happening in drive-ups. And in one of the organizations, the community that they served, they weren't accessing the testing. They weren't accessing the vaccines. Well, come to find out, it's a community where people don't have cars. So a drive-up center was just a waste of energy. But when they created a walk-up center, that's what made the difference. And, you know, it's, again, we are so centered on the way we do things. Come to us, we'll fix it. And when we actually understand and look at the needs of the people we're serving, it may be 180 degrees different than what we expected.
Yeah. Well, and you lived that out through your outreach and collaboration with the age-friendly community in your neighborhood, too, in your region.
Yeah, I think that made a big difference for us. I think, you know, this gave us access to parts of the community we would not normally have had access to, and that was huge for us. Lynn, I wonder what you think about the future. What happens with this initiative, this collaborative going forward, and where else can it go?
So I think one of the ways that things that will be on my plate this year is getting the story out. And we're working on putting together diverse offerings of ways of telling that story, and from some write-ups on each of the organizations to some videos, and we'll, you know, push that out through our communications different platforms to be able to help make sure that people do hear about the power of a care coordination program for social outreach, the power of what you're doing in collaboration with Age Friendly and getting into the community and all those stories. So that's one vehicle for doing it. We're also looking to do a lot more work through the Rise to Health Collaborative, which is an effort of the IHI. And that's specifically also to address some of the racism in our health systems, either experienced by the patients or the staff. You know, I think when we went into this, kind of reminds me that we didn't explicitly say that folks who were participating needed to be focused on the 50 plus. But when I was doing the data collection of recognizing how many people were we impacting and how many people are being served by the organizations that were part of this collaborative, it was very telling that just by doing this work, we are serving the 50 plus. So, you know, there's over 350,000 people were directly impacted by each organization's aim that they sought to address. And of those, you know, more than 50% were 50 plus. Mm. So without needing to have people feel like they needed to fit into a box, it's just what happens. So as we continue to address health disparities work, some of that will be, you know, related to racial disparities. But through all of that, we also know that we bring the aging lens to that effort and to the voice of the consumer. And so we see a key part of our role that way. But we also know the power of the convening of coming together. I mean, I think that was one of the other part of the secret sauce for the LEAD Collaborative, and something that a number of the different participants commented on, particularly at the end of the term, is that all the organizations, there was very few of the original 34 that dropped out. Maybe I can't even count them on one hand. And of those, we had the vast majority consistently show up at our in-person meetings, as well as logging on to our webinars.
Mm-hmm.
And you didn't see a drop-off, which typically, particularly when something is a voluntary opportunity, you know, to participate, it sometimes our quote-unquote day jobs get in the way. Mm-hmm. But there was something about this that people wanted to come together. They found it their safe space. They found it kind of their chance to recharge their batteries, and to affirm that they weren't by themselves doing this work, that there's a broader community. And so we kind of know that that is part of what we want to be able to carry on going forward also.
Well, it really was a privilege for us to be engaged in this. And, you know, as I indicated earlier, we are excited about not just continuing the efforts that we've begun, but in applying the lessons. And there were many that we learned through the process. So we're very grateful to you, to AARP, and to NJHA for including us in this process. And I look forward to hearing more about what happens next in many of the organizations, including ours, because, again, I think, you know, you have to start somewhere. And if there are enough of us that are starting somewhere on this journey, I believe that we will find our way to some place that we really need to go to improve health and improve life for our older adults. Lynn, thank you so much for being our guest today. It's really, truly a pleasure.
I really appreciate it, and I appreciate not only just that you tapping and asking me to be on conversation with you today, but for your commitment to this work, your commitment to the 50-plus who you're serving in the many ways that you do. You are such a great leader and role model in this, and it's been my honor to also get to know you and to consider you my friend. So thank you.
Thank you. Take care, Lynn.
Have a good day. Thanks.
All of the children rise, elders with wisdom rise, ancestors surround us rise.